Welcome to the Beyond the Pearls podcast, based on the Morning Report series from Elsevier. This podcast has been adapted for audio in collaboration with series editor Dr. Raj Dasgupta, as well as the volume editor for each book. Each episode features an in-depth case dissection format and aims to deliver practical, concise, and easy-to-digest information. And now, here's today's episode.
So, with that being said, I gotta tell you, we nailed the gallbladder. We went through all the possible things they could ask you on the board exams. What happens if you have cholecystitis? What happens when it's cholangitis? Guaranteed they're going to ask you about the gallbladder polyp in these cases. Talk about the different types of cholangiocarcinoma. So please know these things for the board exams. And so with our remaining time here, I just want to spend some time and talk about, you know, some nephrology for the IM boards, really focusing on diabetic nephropathy. So when we talk about diabetic nephropathy, it's the leading cause of end-stage kidney disease. And diabetes is typically present about 5 to 10 years before you develop the nephropathy. So why are kidney questions a little tricky on the board exams? Because of the basics. What are they asking you? And remember, when we talk about the kidney is made up of, you know, thousands upon millions of nephrons. And when we talk about these nephrons, you need to know, are they asking about what they call the vascular part of the nephron, or are they asking about the tubular part of the nephron? So when we talk about the vascular part of the nephron, you can look at this diagram. It kind of starts over here where the left ventricle. What happens to the left ventricle? Cardiac output. And what percent of cardiac output loves to go to the kidney? The answer is 20%. And you're going to go from the left ventricle to the aorta, down to the renal artery, to the afferent arteriole. And then blood flow is going to go through the afferent arteriole, through what we call the glomerular capillaries over here. And then remember, the kidney circulation is so unique. It's the only place in the whole body where it's going to be artery, capillary, artery, back to capillary, then finally the vein. So what do I mean by that? It goes from the afferent arteriole to the glomerular capillaries to the efferent arteriole to the peritubular capillaries, and of course down to the renal vein. So that's going to be the vascular part of the nephron, or it could be the tubular part of the nephron. So it starts off with Bowman's capsule, which is going to be contiguous with the proximal tubule. Of course, it's going to go down, you know, the descending part of the loop of Henle, up the ascending limb to the distal convoluted tubule, of course, to the collecting ducts. And remember, the most important thing that the kidney does are going to be the big four. It's going to be filtration, where we talk about taking, you know, fluid and going from the glomerular capillaries into the proximal tubule. Reabsorbing, meaning reabsorbing into our blood. Secreting, which means secreting from the blood into the tubule. And of course, the last is going into the toilet. That's going to be excretion. And of course, one of the words they use quite often in nephrology you should be familiar with is the word clearance, right? And clearance really means that is a substance going to be cleared from the body. It's very similar to, you know, filtration. So it's a substance that's freely filtered. It's not reabsorbed. It's not secreted. That's a substance that's going to be cleared. So think about clearance, you know, very similar to when we talk about GFR. So let's talk about diabetic nephropathy. So, you know, measurement of the estimated GFR and screening for the presence of albuminuria is recommended for early detection of, you know, kidney disease in adults. And remember, it's important that we talk about this, because when we think about kidney function, you know, always remember that, you know, though we often look at serum creatinine is not a good marker in itself of kidney function. It's a practical marker. We use it all the time. But remember that when we talk about, if you want to know what is probably the most important job of the kidney, of the nephron, it's filtration. It's really a passive process. And if you really want to know how the kidneys are doing, I would love to know GFR. But, you know, back to the basics, you know, to figure that out, you need to know things like the oncotic pressure in the, you know, glomerular capillaries, hydrostatic pressure in glomerular capillaries, what's going to be the oncotic pressure in the proxtubule. We don't have this information. So what do we use instead is that we use clearance of things that we don't even practically measure, things like inulin. That's freely filtered, not reabsorbed and not secreted, but we don't even have that. So we use things like, you know, the clearance of creatinine, which overestimates the GFR, because remember, creatinine is going to be filtered and secreted. And then sometimes we don't even get that. And we'll end up using these formulas as a surrogate for creatinine clearance. And then last but not least, we'll use serum creatinine. But remember, that's really influenced by what? You know, BMI and muscle mass. So, you know, if someone has a lot of muscle, their baseline creatinine could be higher. If someone doesn't, their baseline creatinine could be much, much lower. And that's where it opened the door for cystatin C, which is something they love to ask on the board exams, which is, you know, a little better than serum creatinine that takes into account, you know, your body mass index. So it's essential to measure the estimated GFR. Now I hope you appreciate why it's estimated, because we really can't get GFR, you know, to help watch to see how our kidneys are doing. So one of the things that we do a 24-hour urine albumin excretion. And anytime we think about 24-hour albumin excretion or 24-hour anything, that doesn't sound like a very practical thing that patients want to do, or even physicians. So instead of doing a 24-hour albumin excretion, we could actually do an estimate from a random urine collection that we call urine albumin to creatinine ratio. And that's going to be triple star tested on your boards, urine albumin to creatinine ratio. And, you know, when is this ratio elevated? If it's going to be greater than 30 milligrams per gram of creatinine. And of course, if it's elevated, you want to do multiple measurements to confirm it's actually going to be elevated in these cases. Many things can give you a false elevation, whether it's going to be exercise, menstruation, illness, heart failure. And of course, there are, you know, going to be different terminologies that we use. You know, if someone has, you know, a urine albumin to creatinine ratio that's going to be greater than 300, then, you know, we call this severely increased, formerly known as macroalbuminuria. But what did I put over here? I put down, you know, some of the descriptive terms that if you have a urine albumin to creatinine ratio that's going to be less than 30, that's going to be normal to just maybe mildly increased. If it's going to be 30 to 300, we now call that moderately increased. In the olden days, we call that microalbuminuria. And if it's going to be greater than 300, that's going to be severely increased. And as I mentioned right now, that's called macroalbuminuria. So why is it so important to know about this? So we know that moderately increased albuminuria, formerly known as microalbuminuria, is when you have persistent albumin excretion and you're going to have, you know, an albumin to creatinine ratio greater than 30 milligrams per gram. And this puts you at an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, regardless if you have diabetes. So having microalbuminuria is going to put you at a higher risk. Well, now that we call it moderately increased microalbuminuria, puts you at a higher risk for cardiovascular disease. And also, you know, it's very important to know that, you know, KDIGO, the Kidney Disease Improving Global Outcomes guidelines, suggest that moderately increased albuminuria that persists for more than 3 months, you know, that almost follows itself in the definition of chronic kidney disease. So it's very important to do the screening. So what's going to be the screening? Annual measurements of the estimated in diabetics of estimated GFR and the urine albumin creatinine ratio. And, you know, sometimes more frequent assessments may be necessary as kidney function may be getting worse. And if your estimated GFR is less than 30, well, that's just time to go see a nephrologist. If the GFR is less than 30, that's time to see a nephrologist. So I wanted to put this here because there's that big debate. Why are we using albuminuria? Why not proteinuria? Is there one better than the other? And the big take-home message really comes down here, that albuminuria is not only a marker of kidney disease, it's associated with all-cause mortality, kidney disease progression, and cardiovascular-related death. So albuminuria, rather than proteinuria, is now considered the gold standard for quantifying urine protein. And I put this chart here looking at, you know, three things, is that you could talk about the spot albumin to creatinine ratio, which we're doing today. There's a spot protein to creatinine ratio, and of course a urine protein dipstick, and it has all the different values here. So if we talk about the most important thing, is if it's going to be normal to mildly increased, that, you know, albumin, urine albumin to creatinine ratio is going to be less than 30, moderately increased, 30 to 299, severely increased, greater than 300. You compare that to the urine protein dipstick. You know, if it's normal, it'll be negative to trace. Moderately increased is trace to plus. Severely increased is plus to greater. So what is the, you know, for diabetic nephropathy, what are some of the recommendations? So the American Diabetic Association, you know, definitely feels that if you have someone with uncontrolled hypertension, hyperglycemia, these are definitely risk factors for diabetic nephropathy. And of course, you definitely want to treat the blood pressure and treat the glucose to your recommended goals. But the American Diabetic Association definitely recommends ACE and ARB as first-line therapy to slow the progression of nephropathy and prevent cardiovascular disease in non-pregnant individuals. Of course, you want to give an ACE or ARB in individuals who are pregnant. And the ADA definitely believes this in people who are going to be diabetic, hypertension, they have reduced estimated GFR less than, you know, 60 mLs per minute, and have an elevated urine albumin creatinine ratio that's going to be greater than 30. So what's going to be the second recommendation after you give an ACE and ARB? Well, if you're a type 2 diabetic, chronic kidney disease, and all now you have severely increased a urine albumin creatinine ratio of 300 and greater, despite, you know, using an ACE or ARB, then we recommend using a sodium glucose link transport 2 inhibitor to reduce the progression of kidney disease and cardiovascular events. So let's talk about that. So how do these SGLT2 inhibitors, how do they really protect the kidney? So the key thing is always going to be talking about something called tubular glomerular feedback. So all these sodium glucose transport 2 inhibitors will definitely help the kidney. It's going to be a class effect. And when we talk about something called tubular glomerular feedback, what does it mean is that it's in your nephron, you're going to have, you know, an area where you're going to have a connection between the afferent arteriole, which we talked about, that's going to be carrying blood coming from the aorta to the renal artery to the afferent. And eventually, after that fluid gets filtered to the proximal tubule and make its way to the distal. So there is something called the macula densa, which actually will sense what's going to be the amount of sodium that's going to be approaching in the distal tubule, and it will send signals back to the afferent arteriole to manipulate the afferent arteriole, and it does this through adenosine. So when we talk about the example, so if you give an SGLT2 inhibitor, well, what does it do? It dumps more sodium where? Into the urine. So you're going to have more sodium going by the distal tubule. It's going to send signals to the afferent. What's it going to do? It's going to make it constrict the afferent. And why do you want to constrict it? That means less blood flow and pressure are going through the glomerulus, so you're not going to have that damage from all that pressure hitting in. So that's how SGLT2 inhibitors, you know, help the kidney do tubular glomerular feedback. But you got to be careful. Look at the last bullet point here, is that if you have someone who has a very low GFR, anytime you constrict the afferents, what's going to happen to GFR? Well, it's actually going to get, it's going to get worse. You know, you have to be careful because you're going to have less filtering at the time, because what's going to happen? You're going to constrict the afferent to be less, you know, pressure going to the glomerulus. So things like serum creatinine are going to go up. GFR could even get worse. So I just put this really quickly because I said when you do tubular glomerular feedback, it does it through adenosine. And, you know, adenosine, most of the time when I talk about it, it's a very potent dilator. But only when we talk about tubular glomerular feedback and there's a specific receptor in the afferent arteriole, in those cases, adenosine causes vasoconstriction. So what's the third thing I wanted to mention here is that if someone has chronic kidney disease, they're on an ACE and ARB, they're worsening, they're on an SGLT2 inhibitor, they can't tolerate it, or they continue to worsen, then the American Diabetic Association recommends a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist. And the one that got FDA approval goes by the generic name Finerone. The brand name, which I'm always going to mispronounce, is Kerendia. So you would think about this medication. And Once again, this is just an aldosterone blocking drug. It doesn't replace your diabetic or hypertension meds. It's a once daily dose of medication. And basically, well, how does it work? So you could think about any time that you are going to be trying to dump out more water or sodium into the urine, like we talked about, by giving an SGLT2 inhibitor, that you might trigger that secondary hyperaldo state. You may trigger your, you know, kidneys to start reabsorbing that sodium. So of course, what do? You want to block it. And this medication, unlike spironolactone or eplerenone, this actually got the FDA approval in people who have a low GFR. You can't use medications like spironolactone or eplerenone when you have that low GFR. So this drug specifically got the FDA approval for patients with CKD.
Thank you for listening to the Beyond the Pearls podcast from Inside the Boards. This podcast is executive produced by Christopher Brightigan and Dr. Patrick Beeman. This podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not medical advice. Ars longa, vita brevis.